Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You are listening to Mist Apex iRacing Podcast. Let's get faster. Welcome to Mist Apex Podcast iRacing Edition. This is where we try to make you faster, happier, more handsome by speaking to experts like Brad Philpott. How's it going, Brad?
It's going okay, considering I'm basically sat in a sauna in my spare room.
I can't believe you don't have aircon. I think a fan blowing at your rig is the very minimum. Do you not at least just have a fan blowing at you whilst you're iRacing?
Yes, I have a massive cheap Amazon fan, one of those big black tower ones that cost about £30. That's aimed at me, but obviously I'm not allowed that on for the podcast because of the background noise. So that's why I'm sat here in the heat.
Sacrificing for the art. And I have to say, in the shed, the best decision we ever made, because it is a studio as well, is to have an aircon unit, and then I had to cut a hole in the shed. But when we're doing our iRacing tournaments, if for any reason I've hit the wrong setting, or like the other day, I was blindly trying to adjust the temperature with the remote control with VR on, and the remote control batteries had died, and it was just blasting out 25 degree heat instead of 17 that I normally crank it down to, and I was cooking after 40 minutes around Monza.
Yep, I feel your pain. I've been doing a lot of sessions recently basically just wearing my pants to try and get over this heat wave we're seeing at the moment.
And oh dear, what a vision. And I've got my first iRacing related injury. I have a genuine, I think, rotator cuff tear in my left shoulder. And I'm like, oh, that's so embarrassing. I need to make up a good story of how I got that.
I was injured last night by my direct drive wheel when I thought I was turning up the traction control. And I actually turned it off. I went the wrong way, spun out of a corner, completely took me by surprise, and the wheel tried to rip my thumb off. So I feel your pain.
Wow, I'm getting too much direct drive envy here. So let's bring on someone with a belt-driven wheel. We've got Alex Van Gien. How's it going, Alex?
It's going wonderfully, especially because I'm not going to be a belt-driven wheel person for much longer.
You have been tempted. Okay, let's make that our first topic. But first of all, we've also got Matt Two Rumpets. And I think I've done this in the correct iRacing order today, Matt.
I think you probably have. Yep.
So you, Brad's on like 85,000 or whatever, so we can disregard his I rating for the purpose of this. What is it, 6,000?
It's on the verge of 6,865.
We only ever hear about the disasters though, Brad. We only ever hear from you where you go, I've lost 45 races worth of I rating because someone nudged my rear wheel.
Yep, and then what I do is I set about doing every single possible race until I'm back to where I was before the bad thing. So I shut myself in the room and get it back.
So Alex went ahead and compiled statistics of all the total races of our extended crew who organise, you know, this podcast, Mist Apex podcast, and our iRacing tournaments that we do in the F3 at the moment. And it was quite surprising. You were top, Brad. There's no surprise there, I don't think.
Is this number of races?
Yeah, number of race starts. By a long way. How many race starts was it, Alex?
Over 500. But he has also been doing it for a few more years more than us. But the increment increase in the last 2 years has been rather a lot.
And you've felt that, Brad, have you? Like, you've ramped up your iRacing.
Yeah, from basically the moment we were locked down, first of all, last year, it suddenly got serious. And I started doing a lot of races. But the thing I care about isn't number of starts, it's win percentage. So you don't happen to have those statistics, do you, Alex?
we'll go fish those out.
But it was quite high. This year it's like 63%, what? I think, which is a bit crazy. But that's because you stopped doing Formula One and then went and did Formula Three every hour and won pretty much every single race. It's almost cheating.
Oh, Matt, I think I need to speak to Matt for a second because my win percentage is nearly zero at the moment.
Yeah, and my win percentage is I've won a race.
You've won a race once.
I have won a race in F3, no less, at Monza. So that's it. As far as I'm concerned, I'm equal with Brad.
I've won two races in IGP this season, which is the most in any season that I've ever had. However, I've still lost about 300 i-rating in the last 12 weeks, which means I'm only about 20-30 i-rating ahead of you now, Spanish.
Amazing. So I'm basically as good as you at racing now. But Brad, can you ever get the joy that I'm eventually going to get when I pick up an F3 top split win this season on the, what I have to say, massively improved F3 calendar this year? When I finally get that win, I might genuinely take the next day off. You can't recreate that joy. For you, you can only lose when you set about a race.
I definitely can get that joy if we win a big event. So obviously the race we're doing this weekend, which I know we're going to talk about later, or if I win a championship or any of the big events, if I'm lucky enough to win one of those or even just get a good finishing position, I get that same level of joy.
I don't know. I don't believe you, Brad. I think only disappointment can come from being at your elite level. But we've covered the three topics I want to go for today, I think, which is the F3 calendar, the Le Mans race you guys are about to do, the direct drive wheel, which someone on this panel has ordered, and the new Formula V as well. I think we should start with the Le Mans 24-hour. Sorry, not the Le Mans 24-hour, a 24-hour race that happens to be on a French race track. For copyright reasons, because as we covered last week, R Factor have exclusive rights to call themselves the Le Mans 24 for sim racing or some such thing. But the thing I'm excited about is that Brad and Alex are having a sleepover. You're having a lovely little party together. Tell me about your LAN party, Brad.
Okay, so this is quite exciting because at, you know, 35 years old, it's the first time that I'm having one of these kind of computer game sleepover things. Because we have the technology now. So Alex and I are both racing in this Majors 24. He's racing in LMP1 and I'm racing in the GT class. I don't think we're going to end up being in the same split, unfortunately, because I was really looking forward to being in the same race and, you know, him lapping us and, you know, waving as he goes past, even though he's in my spare room. But that won't happen, unfortunately, I don't think. But I've set up a spare room completely for Alex to bring his sim rig over. So it's just a totally empty room. I've just even cleaned the carpet for him.
Wow.
And he's going to have you know, an extension cable with all the plugs he needs, a little fan that I've got for him, and he's going to set up in there and we're going to order pizza and do some racing together.
That is wonderful. I've often thought, you know, if we could hire out a warehouse unit and all bring our sim rigs there if there was enough internet and all like have a full day of doing it. But it's 24 hours. So that must mean he's staying overnight as well. How does it run?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll both be doing some night stints, so we probably won't get a whole lot of sleep. It's going to be a bit like a real world 24-hour race where you have to schedule sleep times and try and make sure you've got enough rest and you've eaten enough, because it's pretty physical when you're doing long stints, and we'll probably be triple stinting, maybe quadruple stinting.
Oh, and Alex, dad to dad, how has that gone down at home that you're off to Brad's house for 30 hours to play Vidgie games? No.
Yeah, it's gone down really well.
Okay.
Really, really well. I've had to arrange for my kids to go to my mother-in-law, so that my wife actually gets a break. I made her a gasp by saying that I have to be at Brad's for 10 o'clock in the morning because Brad doesn't want me there any later because he wants everything set up before the race starts, because then he's not willing to even open the door after the race has started. But yeah, listen, it's going to be really interesting. As long as, luckily, he's got mega internet, so we're not going to have too much of an issue with the sim actually working and getting cut out on things like that, because that would have been the issue. I'm not going to stream it, to be honest. It's so hard driving that LMP car that you've got no downforce because it's obviously all stripped off. It's up to 200 miles an hour before you can even think about it. And you've got to really extend the braking zones because it doesn't deal very well with hard braking. So you can't really dive bomb people. And at the top end, it's not much faster than the car that Brad's driving or the LMP2 cars. It's just the way it gets to that speed. But it's very clumsy in the low speed corners. So you've got to be very, very gentle. So I'm actually probably going through the chicanes and things, maybe slower than the LMP2 cars because of the way I have to get the car down. But then I'm on the power much earlier.
So Brad, you're in an LMP2.
I'm actually in a GT car.
Oh,
so
okay.
We've made a late switch from a Ferrari to a Porsche. So we're driving the car that you own. Because it just turned
out,
well, I don't want to say this. Yeah, yeah. It turned out to be a bit quicker than the Ferrari. Just don't tell anyone else.
Okay, well, we'll put a delayed release on it. But I'm assuming it's too late now because everyone's done qualifying laps and such like.
You actually can still change because as far as I can tell, majors, the organization running it, they don't actually care which car you're in as long as you're qualifying in the correct class. So I actually think you could probably get away with qualifying in a different car to the one you race just because their automated qualifying system doesn't really check which car you're in. But basically, Alex is going to have a slightly easier time lapping us or lapping our class than he would have done because this week iRacing released a big update in the middle of the week. And one of the things they did was really hobble the GTE car's top speed. So we are quite a bit slower on the straights now than before, so you should be able to get past them a bit more easily.
Lapping cars isn't easy. I did a stint earlier in the week and I... here's a couple of my adventures. I went round onto the Mulsanne straight. Some LMP didn't see me and nearly put me in the wall. I was like millimeters from the wall. I had one guy turning on me into a chicane because he didn't realize I was there. I had a GT3 car, didn't know how to let me past and ended up swerving all over the circuit to try and let me past. I then hit a car that had spun at the second chicane, which gave me damage. I decided to keep driving on with damage and then ended up binning it in the wall because the car was so damaged. And that was 9 laps.
Fair enough. How hard are these cars to damage compared? Because obviously I've been doing single seaters.
Not hard at all. You really? Touch a wall, you lose aero. And remember how much, you know, in the F3, how much you lose on the straights just by a tiny bit of damage to your front wing?
Yep.
It's massively
really
extend, yeah, huge. When I did, so I hit somebody sideways and hit the back of my car, I lost 10 seconds a lap.
And it's the thing with the F3s, Matt, that always perplexes me is you bend your wing and it doesn't affect you in the corner at all, but it affects your top speed. And you go, surely that's the other way around.
Well, that's probably just down to drag, but they are very, very fragile. You can actually lose a fair amount of time if you just simply go completely off the track and bounce over a curb.
What, the tin tops? The tin tops?
No, the P1s, the LMP1s.
I thought the whole point, Brad, of these cars was that they were going to be like less crashy and damagey, and I thought you could like bump over curbs, rubbing is racing. It shattered that.
No, not at all. These are very, very fragile cars. And I actually really like that. And there's no fast repairs or anything like that. It makes it much more like a real world endurance race, Le Mans 24 hours, where, you know, if you touch stuff, the cars are fragile and it will affect your aero on the straights. And what it means is if you're not going into the race as one of the favorites, you know, my team, as an example, if we make it into the top split and we'll find out tomorrow, we're likely to be somewhere in the teens. 23 cars get into our class. We're likely to be somewhere 14th or 15th on qualifying times. So we're not going to go win the race on pace. But the fact that the damage is so severe, and it's so hard to drive the cars, and as Alex mentioned, it's hard to lap and all that kind of thing, it means we've still got a chance right up until the final hour or so. People can crash because the damage is so realistic.
Yeah, it is. And I think you were thinking probably more of the GT3 cars or the GT4 cars being a little more robust and
maybe
the wheel-to-wheel stuff. But Brad says that, and I'm thinking of a race I did at Bathurst where I actually crashed and was like in 10th place. And then all of Australia lost its internet and I just gained 5 places because I was still on track and nobody else could drive. So
nice.
The thing about endurance racing is it's never really over till it's all the way over.
Awesome. Well, it's 24 hours and after 24 hours, it is over. What I'm interested in is the difference between the classes because I did my first multi-class yesterday with the little wings. So we'll talk about the Formula Vs that were in that. We all picked Formula Renaults. So it's Formula Renaults, USF 2000 single-seaters, something else. And oh, it was the Skippies and the Formula V. And the Formula V cars are so slow, and the Skippies as well, that they were almost stationary as far as overtaking was concerned. So the gap between LMP1, LMP2, GTE, it's not that broad, is it? Like between LMP1 and LMP2, could the worser LMP1 drivers end up getting overtaken by the LMP2 guys?
Potentially, probably not in the higher splits, because the cars will be doing the kind of lap times they should be doing.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, it's something like 10 seconds between the LMP1s and the LMP2s. Alex's class, for example, are doing 3:10 as the fastest kind of times, and our class is doing 3:30 or 48. So we're a big chunk behind that, but it's all in the corners and the acceleration zones.
Thing is, the funny thing is about the ultimate pace. This is why I got really annoyed when I first started testing this car, because I couldn't get near the ultimate pace of some of the other guys in my team. And okay, I've got guys like Danny and Kyle and Brian Boomsma on my team, who are obviously some of the fastest guys in our Missed Apex events. But those times
why did they let you in? Why did they let you in their team?
God knows. So I got really disheartened that I couldn't get near their pace. I was a couple of seconds off. But actually, when you're lapping people, you're not doing those times anyway, because the cars are a little bit cumbersome. Someone in the chat said that there are single seater cars with roofs,
wheel arches
on, which isn't quite true, because they're tiny for a start, and they're quite cumbersome in the low corners, and the brakes aren't as good. So I can't launch and dive bomb anything into the chicanes, because you're going too fast and you just spin because there's no downforce.
And that's your one tactic.
I've had to completely modify my driving style for this car, because you've got regeneration as well. So you've got to really extend the braking zones if you want to do regeneration. But the issue is, if you catch somebody through, there's a corner called Indianapolis, which is a fast sweeping right-hander, which then goes into a really tight left-hander. Then after it is another right, really tight right-hander. If you don't get somebody on the straight before that corner, and it's a GT car or an LMP2 car, you don't overtake them until the straight after that right-hand corner. You lose 5 seconds.
Yeah, and that is the characteristic that makes Le Mans and this race so interesting, is that the fastest car isn't really any faster into the corners or around the corners. It's really only on corner exit where you can gain that advantage. So, like you said, so much of it comes down to, when do I catch this car, first of all, and then if you're in the fastest car, how good is the person ahead of me at letting me by? I've tangled with GTE cars that will want to try and repass you in the Porsche curves if you get off a little bit in your entry and lose a little bit of time. They will want to come past you again, even though it's pointless, because you're just going to be right past them yet again.
Yeah, and it's things like coming out the pits as well. You know, if you come out the pits and there's a fleet of GT3s coming up on you, you have to still get on the power as fast as you can, because if they get ahead of you into turn one, you're likely going to be behind the majority of them until you start on the Mulsanne straight again. So there's a lot of strategy involved in there. And you know, you've got to rely on the GTEs to know you're there as well. And, you know, around the Mulsanne, around the Porsche curves, you can overtake around the outside because you are much quicker there. But only if they let you, and if the guy in the car in front of you isn't offline or whatever. So you've got to take risks, but not too much risk, because if you have the slightest off in an LMP, if you go near the gravel, you're in a barrier.
And your main challenge is overtaking people as the fastest car. And I know why you've done that. You're a bit of a fair weather racer seeking glory. I know that when you're overtaking a GTE car, even if it was Brad, you'd be there going, a little part of you would be like, I've overtaken him because I'm better than him. And a little part of you would let that little part of your brain foster endorphins in your head. I know you would. That's why you've picked the LMP1.
I'd love for that to be true, but it's not. I didn't even pick the car. I got a message from Kyle saying, do you want to come race LMP1s? I'm like, all right then.
Okay, don't believe you. But Brad, why has your team picked the GTE? Why would you volunteer? What's the mentality to volunteer to be overtaken for 24 hours?
Yeah, so a couple of reasons. First of all, I absolutely hate the regeneration and energy recovery kind of stuff that goes on with the LMP1s. I did a few laps in the LMP1 that Alex is driving and was just nowhere near the pace of the top guys, and I just couldn't bring myself to sit and be an engineer and work out. Same reason that I left the Formula One series. It just wasn't fun. It seemed like an engineering exercise rather than a driving exercise. The GTEs have a larger grid in the race. There's only 10 LMP1s, and there are 23, I believe, or maybe 24 GTEs. So better chance of getting in the top split. And it was, when I drove the car, it was just about driving. I didn't have to do anything extra. I wasn't having to press any other buttons. I just drove the car as fast as I could. And all of our team are quick enough to be in the top split doing it like that. So that's the reason why.
I've stuck it in auto, and because you've got, so the regeneration mode, just very quickly on it, it regains all the energy from braking. So you brake, you regain energy, and you press a button to go faster. However, it has an automatic mode, which I have found out is actually deploys in pretty much the exact same strategy as the manual strategy we've been given. Where Brad talked about being an engineer, what I've got from watching a bunch of videos is the strategy is basically the same for everybody. There is one like perfect strategy which everyone's using.
Okay, fair enough. What were we? So, GT, what's up, Brad?
You're just trying so hard to not come across as bored with endurance racing stuff, and I think you're failing.
No,
I can hear your boredom with it.
That would be fair in any other zone, in any other time, but I've actually genuinely been putting some time, an investment into organising Mist Apex, doing some endurance stuff, and me and my boy have been getting behind the wheel of an endurance car as well. But Alex just distracted me going on about regen, because I don't think he understood it himself. But he had a go, didn't he? He had a good, a fair old go. We were hopping in the Mercedes GT3 around Spa, because I think that's the event we're aiming to kind of swarm as a Mist Apex racing community. Have to say, it was wonderful. I bet we're on completely the wrong setup. I'm betting we were on the wrong strategy, because you can choose between sprint and enduro. But whatever, we just wanted to get in and experience the car. And there was some kind of event that just happened to have that car and the track. Wonderful. Obviously, Spa is always good. The noise and experience of the GT3 car, the steering wheel looks super cool. The seating position much more matches what I've got in the sim rig, so it feels a little bit more realistic as well. And it felt great to drive once you realise you've got a brake a kilometre away. It was fun, it was satisfying, and it was enjoyable. Is the GT3 and GTE classes, are they similar? GT3 is faster.
GTE is faster. They are similar. Right. So they're very similar, actually, but they run to different rule sets. GTE cars don't have ABS, for example. GT3 cars are a little bit more accessible for gentlemen drivers.
Yes.
You can get very wealthy amateurs doing that. There is also an AM class in GTE, though, to be fair. But GTEs are a bit more raw, a bit quicker, and they're kind of designed to run with the Le Mans series.
Okay, so in the GT3 that me and my lad were running, that is kind of like a nice gateway introduction into top, quote-unquote, top, tin-top cars.
Yeah, so GT3, for example, is the top category that races at the Nürburgring. So in the Nürburgring 24 Hours, GT3 is the class, and they're like rocket ships. So it's so funny thinking of them as actually a relatively slow endurance car when you look at the grand scheme of other endurance cars.
Gotcha. Matt?
Well, I've actually raced the Audi front-wheel drive at the Nordschleife, and I've also raced the GT4 at the Nordschleife. So when the latest 24-hour race came on there, I got inspired and said, let me grab my GT3s and go drive around. And what's amazing to me is how much quicker you can be in a particular car than the other cars. I found the BMW to be much quicker, like 7 or 8 seconds a lap quicker than the Mercedes, for example.
Across the Nordschleife, though, which is 85 miles long. Because it's a journey to your parents, isn't it, Brad? Not a racetrack, is it? I mean, it's a road trip.
So what Matt's talking about there is actually really valid, because GT3 cars are all performance balanced, but they achieve that performance in very different ways. So you've got mid-engine cars, you've got the 911, which is still the rear engine Porsche 911, hasn't quite got to the mid-engine like the GTE Porsches. You've got front engine cars like the BMW. There's quite a mix, and a mix of power outputs as well, that are then equalized to kind of achieve a very similar lap time. So that's another good reason GT3 is a good class.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Okay, let's move on a little bit and let's talk about our favorite subject, hiding excessive iRacing spends and purchases from our wives. Because what has been making big splashes in the sim racing world has been, I'm going to get this wrong, we've been describing it as the baby direct drive. So it's Fanatec's latest direct drive offering, and it's meant to be somewhere in between the things like the podium and then the belt-driven wheel. So like a step up, it's meant to be a first step, isn't it, Alex, on the direct drive wheel ladder.
I think it's replacing their CLS range. So it's the CLS direct drive. It is either 5 Newton meters or 8 Newton meters of torque, which depends on the power pack that you buy. So you've got a 5 Newton meter power pack and an eight Newton meter power pack, which there's a really big price discrepancy.
It's huge.
For the power pack when that's not how much that power pack costs.
No,
it doesn't matter. I did get a nice discount. So I was umming and ahhing about this for ages. And then our dear friend Catman, Ted, he said that this new rim, the new Formula rim for Fanatec had come out, and it was a limited edition version, which was much nicer than the other versions that they have on their store. And I was like, right, well, that's my dive in to go and buy it, because I've been planning on thinking about it anyway. So then I bought that, and then the launch came out for the advanced pre-orders, and I didn't get my email, and I couldn't order this wheel. And then I managed to use somebody else's account, order the wheel, and now I have my lovely new direct drive wheel coming in September.
Wow, you took us through the whole ordering experience. Thank you, Van Gene. That was incredible. You mentioned the power packs. I think this is a bit of a cheeky move. So you buy the wheelbase, and then presumably you've got to buy your actual wheel that goes on it, but that doesn't come with a power pack. Like, you're going to buy your wheelbase and there's no way to power it, so you have to choose between, it's separate, it's shipped separately, separate boxes, you choose between a lower power unit and a higher power unit. So is it 5 Newton meters and 8 Newton meters.
When you order the wheel, it comes as standard with the 5 Newton meter power pack. That's part of the price.
Right.
You then pay extra money to have the extra pack.
I don't think that's actually how they're doing it. I think they are selling the unit price, which is quite low, and then they're saying, right, when you order it, now add which power pack, which select one you want.
No, I was watching there's a video with the guy from Fanatec, and he says that that's what it comes with.
Sure, I watched the same one. Obviously, I interpreted it differently. Matt?
If you ask me, this is like classic bait and switch. Oh, look, there's a Ferrari for $300. Let's go to the car lot. Oh, yeah, well, here's the $300 Ferrari. Now, if you want one with four wheels and an engine, that's going to cost a little bit more. Because, now, correct me if I'm wrong, Brad, but to my understanding, if you're going to buy one of these, the 5 Newton meter one is not really the one that you're going to want.
That is correct. Yeah. You're getting it just for the sake of getting it, because it says it's a direct drive wheel, but you could get alternatives for similar price that could actually be more powerful, wouldn't have all the benefits of direct drive, but for all intents and purposes, if you're going to buy this, you want the 8 newton meter one.
And so the video, the guy was sat there saying, well, it's not really about the power, it's about the fidelity. And I was very suspicious of that. To me, this seemed very much like a way, what they want you to do is buy the higher powered wheel. They want you to buy the higher power one, and the price difference in no way will reflect like the production costs of a slightly more powerful power supply. So okay. So from a marketing point of view, that's the approach they've taken. It always just feels a little bit disingenuous when you have things like that and you feel like you're being kind of suckered in. I would think I would have just preferred it, Brad, if they just go, here's the 8 newton meter one. That's the actual power that you'll want. Here's how much it is.
It's very similar to in ranges of cars that you can buy. Often a manufacturer will have a deliberately rubbish base model to just push you into the next one up, because I don't really want anyone to buy that one because there are obvious things that everyone would want that it doesn't include. So I think the whole, it's the fidelity, it's not just the power that matters. It's not quite right, because the way you achieve some of that fidelity is by having a larger range to work within. And so having the 5 newton meter wheel, I just think it's still good. It'll still last for ages. It'll have those benefits. It will be a great unit. It just won't give you everything you really want from a direct drive wheel. Get the 8 newton meter one.
So I never used a direct drive wheel before until a couple of weeks ago, and I went to our friend Danny Henney's house and had a go on one. And the instant thing I noticed about the direct drive wheel was the smoothness. So I've had people talk about the wheel that we've got, Spanners, which is the Thrustmaster TSPC Racer.
Yeah.
And they said it's notchy. And I've never quite understood that until I tried a direct drive wheel. And it is just absolutely silky smooth on the steering, like you're using an actual steering wheel. So I think that's what they're trying to sell as the... I think that's what they're trying to sell as the fidelity part of it. But from some of the reviews that I've watched from pre-production models, it seems like everyone's like, yeah, it's fine, but you need the power pack.
Yeah, so more power, more resolution. But I have an actual question for you two equipment specialists, which is I had originally been thinking about getting a used TSPC to upgrade mine, because I'm still on the T300, and I've been incredibly jealous of Spanners and his full bore rig that he now has installed in his air conditioned shed, none of which I have.
A permanent rig as well. It takes
It burns every time I think about it. And never mind the fact that I'm still using a DK2.
Do you know what? You're a good friend to admit jealousy, because I will enjoy my gear more now with that jealousy in my heart.
I do what I can. I really
Thanks,
do.
Man.
But in looking at buying one, suddenly this option popped up, and I'm like, oh, I could get something that will make Spanners jealous. This is even better.
That's true.
But the rims situation is confusing to me. Do I have to have a Fanatec rim? And if I have to have a Fanatec rim, is there one that would be sort of, I know the limited edition one is both limited in edition and sold out, so I'm not going to worry about that. But is there one that you would recommend for someone like myself who's just getting into this level of gear?
So from my point of view, as far as I know, you don't have to have the Fanatec wheel, but you will have to have a Fanatec quick release boss to bolt onto it so that it can physically connect to the wheelbase. You could then have a range of options of different third party wheels which plug in with USB, which is like pretty much every other direct drive wheel manufacturer. I've got a SimuCube here, and I have a separate manufacturer who makes the wheel, and it plugs in with a USB, which is great. The Fanatec quick release mechanism has been notorious for developing some play, and I've seen a lot of wheels that kind of wobble, which is one of the reasons I didn't want to go Fanatec when I got a direct drive wheel. But you could get either. The problem is, it's expensive any route you go.
Matt.
Okay, so just to follow up, the wobble comes from the quick release boss or from Fanatec wheels directly bolted onto the base?
Well, all of the Fanatec wheels bolt on with this boss, as far as I know, unless Alex has some other information.
They have two different types of bosses. They have the one quick release boss, and they have a boss that twists, which is on the one of the lowest wheels that they've got, which is the McLaren one, which is very highly specced, actually, for one of their lowest price ones, but you do need a Fanatec rim for a Fanatec unit because they all have the control system for their system.
But if you plug in with a USB, you can have all the same things. So you don't have to. You only have to have a Fanatec rim if you want to have particular Fanatec functions working with it. So I could use my current rim on a Fanatec wheel if I had a Fanatec boss.
Email feedback@mistapex.net. That comes through to my inbox and Matt's inbox. And I want to know the biggest purchase you've hidden from your partner and what lengths you've had to go to, because we've heard some fantastic stories in Slack and it's just casual. Like they've dropped things casually and like, yeah, but I can't get it till next Wednesday because I need to get it delivered to work. And then I've seen somebody ask, will that wheel base look significantly different to the point that my wife will notice the difference? And it's just like, there's just this whole espionage element to upgrading gear.
I was delighted that when my direct drive wheel came, it was black and metal and very subtle, which is kind of what the other one looked like if someone wasn't really paying attention. I actually put black tape over the word SimuCube because obviously my other half had heard me talking about SimuCube as a thing. So she would recognize that as a thing that I was talking about that I couldn't really afford. So I covered that up, and by the time she actually knew what it was, I'd had it for ages, and I could just use the line, oh, no, that's been in it for ages.
Excellent. Of course, none of the other people on this panel would ever buy anything and sneak it past their partners. I certainly never have. We were in the pub talking about this, Brad, and my wife went, have you ever hidden any purchases from me? And I was like, no, we're the only ones. Me and Brad just happen to be the only ones that never, ever lie about it. Feedback@mistapex.net. Let me know the lengths you've gone to anonymously, I swear. Alex?
Yeah, I can't hide anything from Lauren. It sits in the middle of my lounge and she sees it.
And studies it.
I talk about things. I can't watch a video on something and not talk to her about it. Even though she doesn't care, I just can't stop myself talking about it. So if ever it comes around, I have to, because she knows how much all these things cost. She's also really good with Google, so I would just get found out
immediately. I imagine, having met your lovely wife, that she takes photos of your rig periodically so she can just check them side by side. Excellent. All right. Well, I am interested. I'm certainly not going to jump all on board trying to pre-order one. I know we're in the second phase of the pre-orders now. I imagine Fanatec are going to sell every single unit of this that they make. They've marketed it really well, and the community has been dying for an affordable direct drive wheel. My feeling here is that some people are going to be a bit disappointed with this halfway house because it's not going to live up to, say, for example, like you, Alex, having jumped on Brad's sim now, or, you know, that I don't think you're going to get that same experience from your direct drive wheel, is all.
And I'm not expecting to.
Good.
For me, this is a stopgap because it's going to be a while before I can afford a proper direct drive wheel. And the way I see it is my TSPC Racer will diminish in value quicker than this one will. So I can get rid of that and I'll sell that for £350. And then I've got this one. It will keep me going for a while until I decide to do what I'm going to do with regards to another, a proper direct drive wheel. And if I do decide to stay with Fanatec, I keep the lovely limited edition rim that I've bought and just bolt on a DD1 or a DD2.
And just as a final note, it is actually ideal for people who don't have the ability to have a full-on sim rig like you or I, Spanners, like Alex, who want the benefits of a direct drive wheel, the fidelity, and, you know, it doesn't get too hot and it doesn't really wear out, but they can't actually bolt it to something solid enough to have a 20-newton-meter one. So it's really perfect for Alex, I think.
Excellent. And just to respond to some chat room comments here, we started streaming these live, by the way, so subscribe to Mist Apex Motorsport on YouTube if you want to join us live. Otherwise, be sure to like and subscribe, and to subscribe on your podcatcher of choice, and tell your friends that after a hard day sim racing, you chill out with a bottle of wine and a listen to Mist Apex iRacing podcast. Tell your friends. That's what I'm trying to say. I nearly said the name here. An anonymous person says, I'm definitely getting my direct drive wheel sent to work so I can swap them in secret. And also, there's another comment. Don't forget to talk about the discount that you get. Always important to say you got a bargain. Like when I got this TSPC, had to you know, full details on a whiteboard about why it made financial sense, like why I couldn't not afford to get that secondhand TSPC.
I've spent $500, but it's like I'm making $300.
Yeah, technically, when I got it, there was a discount on it. And actually, it all ended up cheaper than I was expecting. So the wife was happy when I told her the price.
See Barry. Oh, no, see, I've said the names.
Oh, dear.
I've said it's too late now. See Barry 55 said I had to bring my wife in on the direct drive wheel purchase, but also she shamed me for being a midfielder. So being shamed for being a midfielder. Why do you need a direct drive wheel, Barry? You're only a midfielder. Get your pace up first. Okay, let's move on. Two things. Let's start with Formula V. So for the longest time, iRacing has been missing an entry-level free rookie single-seater, and Formula V is the answer to that. I've never been a fan of the Skippies, but when I was trying to do iRacing on no money, no budget, not spending any money on content, we funneled all our efforts into the MX-5 because it was an accessible, popular, free series, and it always has felt like a big miss that there wasn't an open-wheel version of it. Now, Matt and Alex have had a quick go on it. We swarmed it at Laguna Seca with a field of, I think, nearly 400 people registered for that Week 13 event. And I have to say, I think iRacing has absolutely hit the nail on the head here. I don't know if it is it based on a real car? It's not like a iRacing special. Based on a real car, similar to Formula Ford's, Brad? Is that the kind of...
It's like a slower, cheaper Formula Ford.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, probably harder tyres, less powerful engine. I think it's got a Volkswagen Beetle engine. So when I've raced in real life and Formula V has been a support race, everybody hates them because they drop oil everywhere.
Oh, right. I see. Well, for this, for the purposes of a rookie driving in, so there was a bit of a tyre warm-up issue. The first couple of laps were a bit difficult when you didn't know the car. But once it warmed up, gripped up, and you realised what it was up to, this is exactly what we've been looking for. So around Laguna Seca, there's a couple of braking points. Obviously, you've got to brake at the hairpin, brake into turn one. The rest of it, though, is a lift or flat out, and it's a good entry point. What did you guys think of it, Matt, Alex? Did you have a quick drive around on it? Matt?
I did. Yeah, it was at Alton Park. I jumped on before today's show because I was doing other things yesterday during the swarm, unfortunately. I liked it. It did really honestly remind me a lot of the Skippies. So in that sense, being free and available to people who are beginning to make their way through. One thing I will say, because I actually did a league that raced Skippies. One thing I will absolutely say about that is that doing those sorts of races are fantastic for getting better at racing wheel to wheel. Something that often seems to be lacking, especially at the Formula 3 level, because you can't really get too far away from anyone. And there's always a toe where you can catch right back up and you can go side by side into corners. So you can work on all of those skills in a series like that.
So considering I couldn't stand the MX-5 and the Skippy just infuriated me because it would just, I mean, you could have some hilarious fun in the Skippy because it would just go sideways and sideways, but I could never drive it fast. In the very quick session that I just did before the show, in the Formula V around Alton Park, it's a fun little car. It teaches you the fundamentals because you can't just wang it into a corner and slam on the brakes and trail brake it into the corner because the rear wheel will just go. Yeah. So you've got to get your braking done in a straight line. You've got to get your power on. The gearing is very weird.
Yeah.
Because I was able to go faster keeping it in third gear than going into fourth gear, which was very odd. Good fun little car.
Brad, maybe you can speak to this. It's a weird one. On the straights, you want to shift up early. It's like all the power is at the bottom end of each gear. It's very, very odd because we're so used to sort of letting it go like, doody, like that. But it wasn't. This one, you had to kind of almost get out of third gear, rescue it from itself.
Okay, that's interesting. I would have thought it would be totally the opposite unless it had a turbo. But in my experience, slower cars that are normally aspirated like that, you want to absolutely rev the nuts off it. I haven't driven it, so I
think
can't,
it might have a turbo. I think someone was talking about turbo.
Oh, really? So, if it does, then it's not like a real Formula V, for sure.
Well, because turbos, you have a specific power band, don't you? And as soon as you're out of that power band, you want to shift up or down.
Yeah, the turbo gives you more torque lower in the rev range, which means it's not necessarily ideal to, okay. to change late because your peak power comes in a bit earlier.
Well, look, we were really struggling to get up the hill, as Marcus mentioned there in the chat room. As soon as we could trying to get up the hill in the Formula V's at Laguna Seca, up towards the corkscrew, you went up into fourth gear because that was the fastest way, and it just felt like you had no revs at all. So that might put some people off. But yeah, I don't know. To me, I think they've nailed it, Alex. I could imagine all of us, well, I don't have to because we did it last night, all of us jumping on and having a good session in a Formula V.
Yeah, I think it's the perfect entry single seater. I mean, it was really weird for me because I've spent the last 2 weeks driving an LMP car over 200 miles an hour. So I'm sat there going down the straight going, come on, come on. But yeah, it was a good little fun car, and it's just not as wayward as some of the other slower cars on iRacing.
No, so Bangarangish and Barry are saying no turbo. So I don't know, sorry for leading you down that path. I don't know where I got that from. However, yes, I can imagine some good racing in that. So well done, Formula V. But we're not going to move away from Formula 3 for our main swarms. And I was tempted because last season's calendar was just rough. There were so many like inappropriate tracks, so many random tracks. And I thought, do you know what, this season they're probably going to end up at like all the MX5 tracks. Like, what's that one that starts with TB? Tbilisi.
Scuba.
Yeah, that one. Lime Rock. All those kind of tracks. And I just had no faith that they were going to deliver something raceable. But I don't know if you guys have had a look at the calendar. It looks really good. So I'm really confident to take on the F3 season again. I'm not buying Long Beach. I'm not buying a Monaco circuit. That's week two. That's really the only big flaw, I think, in the calendar. So it's starting off at Watkins Glen. Suzuka, fantastic. Hockenheim, I can't wait to try that. Alton Park, meh. Spa, Phillip Island, meh. Canada, Montreal, Zandvoort, and then Monza, Silverstone, and they've said centripetal circuit for week 11, which
that would be amazing.
That's got to be a mistake. That's the test.
That's going to be either Red Bull Ring or Hungara Ring. Red Bull Ring has come out in the new update.
Yep.
Hungara Ring might come out mid-season. That's why they've left it open. But I think 40 Formula 3s going around the centripetal circuit would be hilarious.
But really, that is a really decent calendar, Matt. So I'm really happy that, like I say, only Long Beach and Phillip Island, really, and maybe Alton Park are making me go, eh. The rest I'm looking forward to, even Monza.
Yeah, I actually like driving around Long Beach. It's a fun track to drive. And Phillip Island, yeah, also not terrible in my eyes. I know everybody else hates it, but Brad, I've always enjoyed my races.
Brad,
there.
You're with me. Phillip Island is just terrible.
Yeah, it's the worst track on iRacing for sure.
Oh, good.
I can't stand it either.
Oh, good. Okay, so Matt's just wrong. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. You're outvoted, Matt.
I have never been normal. I will just say that.
So if I'm going to spend some money here, because there is a bit of cash involved in the F3 season, isn't there? There's Hockenheim is a new track, so that's one of your purchases. Red Bull Ring, potentially, and potentially Hungara Ring. I love Hungara Ring, so if that's turning up, I think I want that anyway. I could see a missed Apex event at Hungara Ring. Do I then want to stretch to Long Beach in that scenario? No, I'm not tempted. I'm not tempted at all. But
yeah, well,
yeah, go on, Matt.
I had actually picked it up back when I was dabbling with the Lotus 79 because they were racing there, and that was oodles of fun at that track.
Oh, it's even better. It's the wrong Aerodromo. Lucas has just pointed out because they're very similar sounding, aren't they? So Aerodromo Internazionale Enzo Dino Ferrari. So that is Imola. So it's Imola instead of Monza. That's even better. I like Imola. Good. No strong feelings one way or the other. We have meetings at 2 o'clock between us on the panel here, and I guess we should take advantage. I've got an hour before the kids come back. What shall I jump into? What shall I spend my time doing? Any suggestions?
Le Mans.
Le Mans, yeah, but Le Mans, I'm not buying the Le Mans track for a one-off race. That's the only drawback for that. Yeah.
Jump on and try the Formula V at
Alton Park.
At Alton Park. Or if you want to try Red Bull, I'd go buy a Red Bull Ring and drive whatever's on that.
It's Little Wings at the moment, isn't it? So that's the one I was describing before, but it's only a partial bit of the Red Bull track. But yeah, that is Skippy's Formula V, Renault Formula Renault 2.0, and the USF 2000s. all on track together. And it was pretty emotional. We had a go at that last night. And I'm not good at multi-class racing. I ended up committing when I shouldn't have committed, being too cautious and having my own class cars stream by me when I was trying to be polite to the slower cars. It was all over the place. I appreciate the skill required. Go and follow my panel here. It's Van Gene, V-A-N-G-E-E-N. Search for Alex Van Gene, and he's the only Alex Van Gene you will find. He's unique and special, like a raggy doll. And Matt Two Rumpets at MattPT55 on Twitter, and follow Matt Trumpets on Facebook. And it's just you posting pictures of trumpets.
Things my daughter bakes, to be fair.
Baking and trumpets. Follow Brad at Brad Philpott and search for... No, it's at Bradley Philpott on Twitter and search for Brad Philpott on YouTube. I've got it now.
That's correct. And I'm going to be streaming the full 24 hours of majors this weekend. So Van Gene might be responding to you on the chat because he's definitely going to crash in his first stint. So he'll be out of his race. So he'll be available to just help my live stream.
I'm willing on betting that I don't even get to drive. I'm betting that my car is going to get crashed before I even get in it because the likes of Brian and Danny will probably get in it before me.
Yeah, I'll take a bet on that. Is there going to be a Van Gene cam, like just a constant Van Gene cam on Brad's stream? Just watching
it might
him?
Just be in the background when I go to the wide angle where you can see the whole room. You'll just see Alex eating pizza on the chair behind me.
Well, enjoy your sleepover LAN party, guys. I'm so excited for you. Don't stay up past midnight and don't splash any water on Van Gene and don't feed him after midnight. That's the rule. It's either that or Gremlins, I forget which. You can follow me as well at Spanners Ready and the show at iRacing Podcast. Have fun iRacing. Join us for the swarm. Message me, Spanners at mistapex.net or racecontrol at mistapex.net, and get involved with us. We are pretty much every single week. We practice on a Monday night and then we go and attack something official. At the moment it is F3 on a Wednesday night. Plus, we have strong 50 to 60 car grids in F3 at the moment, and they are a lot of fun. It's a great evening when we do those Formula 3 events, a carnival atmosphere of sim racing. Until next time, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Mist Apex Podcast iRacing Edition. If you're not at ease with your knobbly knees and your fingers are all thumbs, stand on your two left feet and join our Raggy Doll chums. There you go, Alex. You were the only one who got my Raggy Dolls reference last week.
Mark got it in the chat.
I've got no idea what you're on about. You said that in the other podcast.
You're a year younger than me. How did you not see the Raggy Dolls when you were a kid?
What channel was it? Was it an ITV one?
I don't know.
It was on telly.
TV.
There was two channels.
You were grown in a lab, though, weren't you? You didn't have a childhood.
The ITV kids shows were just rubbish. I never watched it. I was always on BBC.
Wow, you were brand loyal at whatever, at 8.
Because you were so cultured at 6.
Your internet's rubbish, Alex. Get out of your kitchen.
Alex, your internet's really bad. Yeah. You're like glitching the whole
thing. I have no idea why. It's never a problem.
Glitching really in the kitchen.
Wi-Fi. That's why you need a little cable that you can run out to your router.
Yeah, but it's never a problem. I've done the last however many shows. I've done every single show this season.
On Mist Apex?
Yeah.
You did Mist Apex shows on Wi-Fi?
Oh my God.
I'm out of here.
I should have said that, should I?
Well, I just bought a $1,500 wheel to go iRacing with.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.